If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome, everybody, to Season 3, Episode 4 of The Psychologists Are In. I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Albertson.
And today, we are talking about the greatest adventure in the history of basic cable with quite possibly the greatest guest in the history of basic podcasting. That would be Jay Chandrasekhar. It was so lovely catching up with him. I cannot wait for you guys to hear this episode. Such a joy. Lots of fun memories. You all are going to love it. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Jay.
Maggie. Hi, Tim.
Tim, what's behind your head? What's going on there?
Just a set of beautiful blue balloons. That's tough to say. That my best friend sent me for my birthday a couple days ago.
Yeah. So Tim's birthday was Friday. And yay. So, Tim, what'd you do? How did you celebrate?
So last night, as we talked about last week, went and rocked out at a Frank Turner show at the Wiltern. Even though I'm now totally done with COVID, my voice is a little scratchy because I was screaming so much and yelling and singing along. Here's the really cool thing about Frank Turner shows that I always know there's cool things about Frank Turner shows, but the crossover fans between Frank fans and psych fans was pretty epic. Because the tour manager, the wonderful Tree Steed, who listens to our podcast in Manchester and all over the world.
So sweet.
Set up this amazing little sort of private VIP area for me, so I could have a good view. So you walked in and said, "Frenchner, Tim Amundsen birthday party." So everyone walking into the venue could sort of see this little area. So people kept coming up to me and saying, "Happy birthday, man! By the way, love psych, and a lot of them love the podcast." So I'm gonna start before we get going. To the dude with the tight mohawk and the Battle Legend T-shirt who came up and said, "Happy birthday!" and how much he loves the podcast. Thanks, man. It was really nice meeting you, and all the other people whose names, I'm sorry I didn't get your name, Mohawk Man, but it was really dope meeting you. And everybody else, thank you for coming up. I don't know if they're all listening to the podcast, but it made my heart really warm, in addition to the bourbon I was drinking.
Oh, nice. Of course. What kind of bourbon was it? What kind of bourbon were they serving?
I'm not sure. Allison grabbed it for me, so I'm not sure what it was.
That's nice.
I don't think it was Angel's Envy, but it was still delicious Kentucky Magic Water, whatever it was.
We love Kentucky Magic Water. Yay! That's a perfect celebration.
Because of COVID, I haven't been able to like hug my friends at the band for a long time and get some up close pictures. So got some great pictures with my boys, which was really fun. And we just rocked out at the show and then went home to bed so I get ready for to podcast the shit out of it with my bestie and my friend Jay.
Yeah.
I haven't heard Frank Turner. I'm excited to try Frank Turner.
Oh, he's cool. Oh yeah, you're like a music guy, Jay. Like I feel like you know a lot of music people.
I do, but I gotta get turned on to this Frank Turner.
He's great.
I will email you some epic lists.
Great. So
he's originally he's a punk rock guy from England. And then he sort of went a little more folk punk, and his latest album is a lot sort of harder. Is back to sort of his original roots of a little harder punk. But this dude just did 50 states in 50 days. So we were 40. He's flying to Hawaii as we speak right now. He's on his way to Hawaii with Matt Nazir to do their acoustic show.
Amazing.
But this is the last full band show of the tour, which was pretty, I got to say, it was probably my favorite Frank show I've seen. And I've seen a lot of them.
I love it, Tim. That makes me so happy for you that that's how you got to spend your special weekend.
Thanks. And I think I said last week that I was in England in 2015, so he came to my birthday dinner for that. So this is my second birthday I could spend with my buddy Frank, which was...
Love it.
And Matt and Tree, and it was pretty lovely.
Tim, we're so lucky to have our dear friend Jay here with us today. I'm cannot thank you enough, because this is, it's so fun actually just to see you and catch up with you, but also you directed this episode, but this was in what, 2008? And
Objection. He didn't just direct the episode. He directed the shit out of this episode.
Excuse me. He directed the shit out of this episode. And I was thinking back, Jay. Well, we'll get to other stuff you have coming out in just a second. But I was thinking back because I think the first time I met you was on the set of Beer Fest.
Uh-huh.
You won't remember this. You won't remember this. Rodé and Eric were both in that movie. And Rodé had just done Dukes of Hazzard with you.
Right.
And then you came up and did, and I kind of, I think we maybe interacted for a second. Got to know you on this episode. Then you directed Angel from Hell.
Yeah.
Which was an episode, you did an episode of that, the show with Jane Lynch, which I know we bumped into each other last year in Vancouver, and I brought up this story, which I hope it was okay to tell. Because it was such a crazy episode on the Angel from Hell, because the shooting at that concert in France had happened, and you had friends in the band.
Right.
And I'll never forget it. It was such a, you just don't forget those moments, like where you were and what was going on. And anyway, you now have a movie coming out this week.
Yeah. So darling listeners, in case you're not aware, Jay is always a maker of very fun comedic entertainment. And I think obviously the movies we mentioned is in the pudding. And the four episodes of Psych he's directed.
Yeah, four episodes.
You get even more proof. Tomorrow, go see Easter Sunday in the theater when it comes out.
Are you in it, Jay, as well?
I am. You know, the film is about, it stars this guy named Joe Coy.
Who is
the biggest ticket-selling comic in show business right now.
Oh, wow.
He came to LA recently and sold 58,000 seats over three nights. Like, he sold out the Forum three nights in a row. Sold out the basketball stadium in San Francisco two nights in a row. Like, the guy is just this massive comic. And, you know, during the pandemic, I'm going to name drop. Steven Spielberg saw...
name drop all you want.
One of his Netflix specials. And, you know, he's like, wow, this guy, let's make a movie with this guy. And so they called me and said, can you take this script and kind of, you know, tune it up a little bit and then direct the film? And so I flew to Vancouver and I made this film with this comic who I'm a big fan of. And it's his first movie, you know, it's like, and it turned out really well. And, you know, Universal, you know, the film business has gotten a little crazy now in that we are the only comedy coming out in a wide release this summer. The only one.
Yeah, like, and I just want to pause 1 second, Jay.
Yeah.
So you're saying our good friend Steve Spielberg called you and said, hey, can you do this thing for me?
I love that you just brushed over that too. I was like, oh, can we please go back to the part where Steven Spielberg called you to fix up a script and direct a movie? Can we just...
Well, let me just be frank here. Like, he approved me to go do it and then had his people call me and say, hey, will you go do it?
But, same thing, Jay.
But he's a big fan of Joe Coy. And so while I was making the movie, I would get, you know, I would get great casting notes. I would get like, hey, this actress, what do you think about her? And we kind of were able to do it. I mean, because there's a pandemic. So we've been never actually met, right? We just, because he's, you know, he's an older guy and he didn't want to get COVID and, you know how it goes. So, but like, for example, on the first day, Joe Coy wore a Los Angeles Dodger hat. And I got a note from Mr. Spielberg that's the next day that said movie stars don't wear hats.
Hello.
I'm like, hey Joe, let's lose the hat, pal.
Tim slowly removes his hat right now.
That's right.
That's hilarious, by the way. I love that Spielberg. But also I love, you know, you kind of think someone who's as busy as he is and that they're not watching that closely, maybe to me, but to even catch that note and to send you a message about it. Woo.
Yeah. It's incredible to be working for the king of show business.
Back in the day, I was excited just to get a parking pass at Amblin Entertainment.
Jay, that is so... Okay, so keep going. You said you were going on about getting the call to direct.
So we went up to Vancouver and I hired a friend of mine named Kate Angelo, and she and I, and the original writer, we rewrote the whole thing. And, you know, the film is, you know, if you've seen Joe's stand-up, there's a lot of time spent on the, you know, his mother's character, who's just this, like, insanely type A immigrant Filipino mom who's just really wanted him to be a nurse and was really upset with him being a comedian. And we kind of just took that story and built it into the whole movie. So in the movie, he goes home, he's an actor trying to make it in Hollywood, and his mom sort of bullies him into coming home to Daly City, which is near San Francisco, for the weekend. So the whole movie takes place over 2 days in Daly City, and it's called Easter Sunday because that's the weekend Easter she Sunday. Wants him home.
That's so fun.
Something else I want to tell you about Jay. So like how I am rather proficient in the epic beard, Jay is profoundly epic in the cop stash, which I'm a little disappointed I'm not seeing it right now, but maybe I can hope. Is there a cop stash in the movie?
No, I play an agent. I play his Hollywood talent agent. And great. So I'm just like this, you know, I'm kind of slick and whatever. I mean, the gag that I play is that I constantly want to get off the phone with him. So I keep telling him I'm driving over Mulholland or I'm going up Coldwater or whatever.
Going to the canyon. You know, fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're totally so good at that. I remember watching, I mean, obviously a lot of people know you from Super Troopers. Did you direct those as
I
well?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
Wait, Jay, how long have you been directing?
You know, I started my comedy group, which is Broken Lizard when I was 19. And I started directing videos for that group when I was 19.
Is that out of Chicago? What city were you
in? It was out of the school, Colgate University in upstate New York. But I directed my first feature film when I was, I think, 24 or 25. And that went to Sundance. And then the next movie was Super Troopers, which sold at Sundance. So
huge.
I've been doing it since I was early 20s, you know?
It's so crazy.
Just like Steven Spielberg, who started when he was a kid.
You were saying the king of Hollywood. And I was like, you're not far behind, Jay. You're building up quite the...
You know, I mean, I've now made 10 films and 150 episodes of television.
So when did you get into TV? I was looking back. I feel like it was we were so lucky to get you on Psych. I remember at the time, like it was a big, we were so excited when you came up to do it. And then you ended up doing 4. Plus, we always had such a good time when you came up to direct. Because we don't really, you know, we never partied unless you were there. That's it.
Next question, I got some bonus Jay on Warehouse 13.
When did you get into TV?
Well, the first film I made was called Puddle Cruiser, and it was a film we shot at Colgate. It was about just a college story. And NBC bought the television rights to that. And so we wrote a half-hour pilot, and then we shot it. Almost got on TV, like all pilots. Didn't go. But it was really great. And then Judd Apatow saw that pilot, and he decided, because he called me up, he goes, hey, you know, I saw this pilot you did called, it was called Safety School.
Wait.
And he goes, that was really good. NBC should have done it. And I said, yeah, thanks. I'm shocked you saw it. And he goes, well, I just figured since they didn't do it, I figured I'd just do the same idea. So he goes, I did Undeclared. And now I have it on Fox. And he goes, would you direct this show that I just kind of did because you did it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. So I did about 4 of those. And then executives, they liked the work that I did there. So they said, well, why don't you come do this show? What's it called? Arrested Development. I did a bunch of those in the early episodes. We were kind of sort of still figuring out what that show was. And then from there, I just kind of worked for Fox, and then I worked for NBC and then ABC, and you know, it just keeps going. You know, I was making Dukes of Hazzard, and we needed a bad guy, right? Warner Brothers is just like, hire the most famous person you can get and we'll pay him. And so I talked to McConaughey.
And he
was like, I don't know, he wasn't the lead, right? He was just going to be this like race car driving dude. And he's like, I don't know, man, you know, and then he just said he decided not to do it. And Warner Brothers is like, we need somebody famous. I'm like, nah, I think what we need is like somebody super funny. And this dude, James Rodet, auditioned for us and he's fucking hilarious, right? And they're like, who is he? He's nobody, right? And so they kept having me try to get famous people, and the thank God they were all like, well, I'm not the lead. I'm not going to do it. And at the end, they're like, fine, you can have Rodé. And I was like, yes. And
because it was the one time Matthew did not say, all right, all right, all right.
And then Rodé is like suddenly down there and he can't believe he's this huge part of this Warner Brothers. He can't believe it. He's like, I don't even know. How did that happen? And then, so then we're like shooting a scene with Burt Reynolds. He's like, he pulls me aside. He goes, I don't know, man. I just don't know. That's Burt Reynolds. And what am I supposed to? Why am I even here?
Oh, my like, God. Rodé, are you serious?
Are you kidding me? And he goes, I don't know if I can do it.
Oh, my God.
And Burt Reynolds hears him and goes, let's go for a walk. Mm-hmm. And he takes Rodé and they go walking. And I don't know what the hell they talked about, but they're basically like, Burt Reynolds was like, you're going to be okay, kid. Don't worry about me. Just do the lines, do the scene. And they come back and Rodé's like, let's go.
That's amazing.
What a story. I knew it was a huge deal that he got that role. Like, I just remember in the process of it and other people auditioning and whatever, it was like huge. And that was before Beer Fest?
It was before Beer Fest. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's then, right. Because after that, I was like, of course I wanted him in Beer Fest. And he played the courier in Beer Fest.
Yeah.
Who brought the bottle of beer to the Germans. And then they filled all of his orifices with tubes and drowned him in beer.
That
and my dad was
funny.
On the set at the time. And he goes, you know, that will kill him. And I said, yeah, dad, that's what they're trying to do. And he goes, that's not very nice.
Oh, dad. Oh, that is so sweet. That's so sweet. He was worried about him.
Yeah.
He was like, that's real. What you're doing right now is real.
Yeah, that will kill him.
That will kill him.
Oh. He's a doctor.
So he knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was just trying to save you a lawsuit or something.
Yeah,
I don't know which movie I'm going to rewatch tonight. Am I going to watch Beer Fest again, or am I going to watch Dukes of Hazzard again?
Dukes is so great too, and that was Sean William Scott, right? And then
Sean William Scott and Johnny Knoxville and Burt Reynolds and Willie Nelson and Jessica Simpson and Linda Carter and Joe Don Baker. Cool.
So cool, yeah. And you directed. Yeah. When I was looking you up, an episode, I think we just missed each other by like an episode, but I did the season of Lethal Weapon you directed. I just don't think we you weren't did. In the same. I don't think we were in the same one. Yeah. I was
Sean. Mostly Sean. Yeah. And Damon Wayans Sr.
So then, so Beer Fest was probably 06?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. 06. And then this was 08.
Right. Right.
We were so lucky to get you.
Well, I mean, you know, anywhere Rodé was, I was like, yeah, I'll go there. Sure. Why not?
That'd I love it. Why I love not? It. And then, in addition to the gazillion things you have happening right now, I just discovered you also have an app.
Yes. So.
Okay.
So let me go. It goes a little back in time. So 20 years ago, Super Troopers comes out at Sundance, and we're the toast to Sundance. Everybody loves the damn thing. Fox Searchlight buys it. We're like, oh, everybody loves us. Then the movie comes out a year later.
That's because it's genius.
I appreciate that. A year later, it comes out, and on Rotten Tomatoes, we get a 36% fresh rating. And I was irate. I'm like, what? Everybody at Sundance loves us. And I was like, who are these reviewers, right? They're just... They're just strangers with great writing jobs. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know when the last time I went up to a stranger on the street and said, hey, what movie should I see? I mean, that's what we're doing, right? And when you take them all together and you group them up and then you're really like, did they go to college? Did they smoke weed? Did they drink beer? Do they, you know, we got a review for Beer Fest from a woman in Arizona called Grandma's Reviews. And her review was... I didn't like Beer Fest. I thought there was too much drinking. And I'm like, you know what, Grandma? That was the whole point.
So, it's called Beer Fest.
That's right.
I love it. This is so great. I want to tell stories. I want to hear all of your stories, Jay. And I also want to talk about the... what else do you have coming up? So you have Easter Sunday coming out. I feel like I looked you up and you had several other...
Well, we have another movie that we made with Broken Lizard. It's called Quasi, and it's set in 13th century France. And my friend Steve Lemmy plays the hunchback, and then my friend Paul Soder plays the Pope.
I think it's really rare with all the work you've done, and I know others in Broken Lizard have gone on to do other things, but that you guys always keep coming back, like you keep the band together. It's really
well,
cool.
You know, we met when we were 18, you know, before we had ambition. So we're true, we're true friends. Like when we make a movie, they pay us money to hang out with our best college friends and crack jokes. And then they send us on a drinking tour to promote it. And you're like, why would we ever not do that? I mean, you're gonna have to pry that thing from my dead hands. I can tell you that. We're gonna go all the way to the end.
I love that. That's how we feel. You know, I feel like in this weird way, even though it wasn't college, but it was still almost 20 years ago now that we all met, and we're all just as close, if not closer. Tim and I are still here. We're still making these psych movies.
Every year they're still making those psych movies. I'm like, damn it, I want to direct one.
I know. Steve has directed everyone so far.
I would if I were him.
Would you? You should come be in one, if nothing else, though.
I would love to. Yeah. I would love to be in one.
I mean, we're hoping that we get to keep doing it every year. But
I got to be in one of those psychs.
You did. Bollywood, right?
Bollywood. Yeah. Bollywood Mystery or something. I don't know. I got to play a choreographer in that.
Bollywood Homicide. That's
Bollywood
right.
Bollywood Homicide. Yeah. That's right.
And what were you doing in Vancouver? I feel like we were all out to dinner last year and ran into you.
Yeah, I was making Easter Sunday.
Oh, you're making? Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I remember you saying you were making a movie up there.
Yeah. And I heard you guys were in town making a movie, so.
And then we happened to be at the same restaurant on the same night, which was so nice because in the middle of COVID, that I loved that restaurant because they had that huge outdoor patio. It was really, felt really good.
You guys were with Dulé, right?
It was me, James Dulé, and Jasmine.
Right.
We were having a nice little drink for a nice little reunion. It was like, I think everybody was just so happy to be working after everything.
I was still in quarantine. That's why I wasn't invited.
That's right. You were still in quarantine.
You guys are lucky to have this. Like the idea that you get to keep coming back together and making another movie. It's like, this is the, I directed, I don't know how many, maybe 8 or 9 or 10 communities.
Yeah.
And they were always like 6 seasons and a movie. That was their mantra. And they got to the 6th season, but they'd never make the movie. And there's this constant online struggle. Are they going to make a movie or not? I'm like, look at the psych guys. They're on like the 4th movie, right?
Yeah. We can't believe it sometimes. I mean, the series wrapped in 2013. And we didn't make the first movie until 2017. So a ton of time had passed. A ton of life had passed. Many things happened. And here we were 4 years later, just as close as we'd ever been. Maybe closer. And it's just this gift we get to keep doing every year. And now we're making this podcast, which has been so fun because we get to reconnect with everybody and kind of relive it. But it's not this thing of the past. It's actually still alive. It's fun to sort of go back to the origin story of everything and then be like, holy hell, we still get to make these. We still get to do this.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And, you know, your show, you know, just when I got to watch it again, I'm like, it's the rare, it's almost a unicorn in that it's a full-on comedy. But it's an hour long.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the show Chuck, I directed a bunch of those and they were comedy as well. But there were all these dramatic scenes that were in it as well. There's some drama in this, but not that much. Right. This is like the 1 hour comedy that is, you never see it. You just never see it.
Yeah, you don't. It is truly that. And it stays really light. And I also feel like with Peacock, and I guess the movies too, bringing people back to it. We're finding now like people who watched back in the day, now their kids are watching or kids are discovering it for the first time. And people who are listening to the podcast or discovering it for the first time. It's so cool. And that's why even in you talking about like Broken Lizard, just understanding how special it is to have those kinds of relationships over this kind of time in our business. It's rare and it's special. Yeah. And we get to reconnect with our friends like you.
I mean, I can't tell you how happy I am to be on this podcast. I mean, I'm really like, I'm like, wow. Particularly watching it and being like, we did have such a good time. And we made a great thing, too. I mean, you know, the show is great. It's not good. It's great.
If you know me, you know I've been obsessed with Thrive Cosmetics for a while now. Not only do they make incredible makeup, like their Liquid Lash Extension Mascara, brownish black shade to be exact, but Cause is in the name for a reason. Every purchase from Thrive Cosmetics supports organizations that help women thrive. Thrive Cosmetics' message is incredible and inspiring. For every mascara, eye brightener, lip gloss, etc. purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, fighting cancer, and more. Plus, the makeup is stunning, you guys. It's so, so beautiful. These are high-performance beauty and skincare products made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. That means no parabens, sulfates, or phthalates. Certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. My favorite, it's true, is the ultra-lengthening mascara. It mimics the looks of lash extensions. I am obsessed. No glue and no expensive salon prices. It's just really, really, really beautiful. I wear it every day. I also have the eye brightener, which helps me look like I've had plenty of restful sleep. Even if I hadn't, we were celebrating Tim's birthday just a little too late. It's a vibrant, well-rested look in 13 shimmering shades. And while I'm at it, their leave-on lip serum treatment is amazing and nourishes and restores dull, dehydrated lips. I have actually tried this after like being in the sun for a while and hiking. It's summer, you guys. It's so good. It's so good. It gives your lips a smooth, glossy look and plumps and smooths while hydrating. Now is a great time to try Thrive Cosmetics for yourself. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/pineapple. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics.com/pineapple for 15% off your first order. I feel like this episode really, we got into, I think, more action and that sort of adventure feel, like almost like that Indiana Jonesy adventure feel. Yeah. And I remember the helicopter was a battle. That's all I remember. I don't know what the deal was, but it was either a budget or the timing of the day or something. But I know that helicopter shop, when it happened, I was like, or when I saw it, as I was rewatching the episode, I'm like, what is the story with the helicopter? I knew it was something. Do you remember?
Well, when I saw the helicopter in this episode, I was like, I was shocked again, because it was such a big deal. There's like guys with guns hanging out of a helicopter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, right. Because it was in that script. And the line producer, I can't remember who that was, but he was just like, you're not getting a real helicopter.
Of course. He's the one keeping the budget intact.
And I'm like, no, we need a real helicopter here. And, you know, in the feature business, we get a helicopter. And I kind of, you know, bullied him into getting a helicopter.
Good.
But it worked. Incredibly valuable a moment in this show, because you're like, God, this is really big. And those dudes have guns and they're hanging outside the helicopter. You're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like you felt like it could go, like that episode could go anywhere. And then it did, you know, like all the way to the helicopter.
Such an incredible shot.
Yeah. And then James is like, I think we're going to get to ride on helicopter.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so crazy. It was so funny. That was probably my biggest memory from this one. Because we're in the interrogation room most of the time. Well, how about I dive in? I'm going to, Tim, do you have any firsts in this one? I didn't.
I think I've got three.
Shut up. Really? Oh, I must've been like half watching or something. How
I could be overstepping and still in my concert high, but we'll see. I think to start off with, the greatest adventure in the history of basic cable, titled the episode for those of you paying attention and playing at home. I think this is one of the first episodes without a murder.
Oh, that's right. Nobody's actually
murdered. Although there's lots of threats of murders.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's some gunplay.
I thought about that too. I feel like we haven't had a lot of that on the show yet. This one really upped the game and the effects and the drama. All right. So episode 4, The Greatest Adventure in the History of Basic Cable. This was written by Josh Bissell. And Josh, he wrote on a show I had done like in 2003 before this. And we did a little show together called It's All Relative. And I was so happy when he got to do this show as well. It's such a small freaking world now. Do you know Josh?
Jay? I love Josh Bissell. He's a big talent. This episode was really well written.
Yeah.
When I finished watching it, I'm like, that was the greatest adventure on basic cable. I really was like, this is really adventurous. And
we don't lie.
No, it was dead trip.
Anyway, all right. So, greatest adventure in the history of basic cable. Pineapple sighting. I completely missed this. Tim, did you catch it?
I missed it too. I missed it.
Yeah, no one got it. Okay, the cookie jar in Henry's kitchen is shaped like a pineapple. He also has a plastic pineapple in his living room when he answers Sean's call. And there is one painted on the cave wall. Devin, amazing job. I did not see
it. You're so obvious. How did we miss those, Max?
How did we miss the cave wall, which I thought was so cool? It didn't even click that there was a pineapple there.
Oh, on the cave wall. Oh.
Yeah, where there were like pictographs, right? And like,
yes.
Okay, cold open, Monday, 8:15 p.m. Sean, Gus, and Henry sit in an interrogation room. Chief Vic, Lassie, and Jules sternly walk in asking, "Where's the gold?" To which Sean replies, "That's a very long story dating back 20 years. Flashback to 20 years ago. Sean's uncle, played by Steven Weber, who I thought was so good.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
In that opening scene, James has that great joke about it being illegal to give a perm to a possum.
I wrote that down. That's what
I was like... I'm on the right show here. That kind of joke.
There's also a moment in this first interrogation scene where Sean looks right, or James looks right at the camera just for a second. Did anyone else catch this? No, oh, it was so good. I loved the music. That was the other thing I wrote down. I felt like the music in this episode was very fun and adventure-y. Okay.
I can't get another minute into the podcast without saying how great you looked in this episode, Maggie. You had like a little bit of tan. You got a glow in this episode.
Thanks, Tim. I thought the same with you too. I think there was something really nice. One of the things I wrote down was I kind of loved that we have this big, bright, sunny show. It's almost always daytime. The sun's always out. Every scene is very warm and lit. And there was something very cool about starting this off with like, well, it started 20 years ago in the storytelling and it's darker. Like the room, the lighting, it's really, and it's also very pretty. Tim, I thought you looked stunning.
I think I had a new haircut for this one. My hair was a little sassier than usual.
Yeah, the hair was especially good. I think I had a little bang happening too, which was bold.
I like this part of the podcast.
Oh, Jay.
I think I have another first.
Tell me.
This was the first episode, certainly of season 3, without, this is going to be a very... For those of you playing along who do the Pepto Pink drinking game,
yeah.
My episode. I don't think there's any Pepto Pink in this episode. You're wearing
really missing it.
A very dark sweater under your brown jacket, which I can only describe as a British racing green.
Hmm. Wow, Tim, specific and spot on. I love it. No, it was really good.
I was disappointed there was no bright O'Hara colors in this one.
No, I really was missing the pink, but I think it goes with the tableau of the episode as well, especially like us being in the woods and the brown and the green and the thing. Jay, did you plan all of that?
I did. I did. They said, "What about pink?" I'm like, "Nah, not this time. We want British racing green."
So all of you who stay sober this episode, blame Jay. Okay.
The interrogation room, 12 of the pages were in that room of what is basically a 40-page script.
It was no joke. We were in there a long time. You made it very interesting and creative with like the other side and, you know, but I had that thought of like, we had Jay. I kept waiting. I'm like, I know this gets really adventurous at some point. I'm like, we have to use him wisely, not just be in an interrogation room. And then it really makes up for it.
The cylinders opened up. And this was an amazing episode for me because I got to do all the scenes with my dear friend Maggie in the interrogation room. And you and I were not out stuck out in the woods running in the mud. running.
No, I also had the thought too of like, oh, we probably worked the couple days that we're in the interrogation room that we do have that shot at the end. But Tim and I were probably in LA for a good chunk of this one, because anything that was out and that was outside of the interrogation room, but that one scene we were.
Yeah, I mean, we were out there in the woods a long time.
And you guys.
There was that mud thing and trying to get Dulé's shoe to get stuck. And, you know, there was a whole lot of things.
There was
going
a
on.
Boat as well. A
boat.
Yeah. It was right. No joke. It was a no joke episode. Did we have an extra day for this? Do you remember?
Yes, I feel like we did. We had to. It was too much.
Yeah. We tried to do these hour long episodes. And I know we've talked about it before on the podcast, where most hour long shows get 8 days. We had 7.
Yeah.
And so it was, and we did a really good job of making it, but there were some times that a script would come in. It's like, we have to get 8. I'm glad you got the extra day, Jay.
Yeah, me too.
You deserved it.
Thank you.
20 years ago, Sean's uncle, played by Steven Weber, who is fantastic in the episode, speaks at career day posing as Sean's dad, only for Henry to show up and ruin all the fun. Okay, flash forward to Sunday night. Henry and the boys walk back together after watching a movie. They notice someone sneaking around in Henry's home. Henry grabs his stun gun, only to find out it's Uncle Jack with a treasure map.
In a very Lasseter move, the stun gun is hidden in the birdhouse.
Yeah, it is a very Lasseter move.
You do?
I loved it.
That Weber is such... I remember meeting him and being like, I mean... He's such a charming guy. Like,
he is very charming.
Charming and funny. And just, he goes, what do you think if I pronounce it Argentina? I was like, hell yeah. And he goes, so like, just do it. I'm like, yeah, go for it. He goes, okay, I'll do it. And then it was sort of this thing where he was like, what about this? And what about that? I'm like, great, do it. Let's go. He had the right instincts. Or like the tone of the show, like the silliness was, you know, it wasn't just, you know, Sean and Dulé, like, you know, he got into it too. It was fun.
Yeah.
So lucky to get guest stars who come up to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really did. And likewise, we had a director in you as well, who was so like, I don't know that anything ever got suggested to you that you would be like, no, unless it was just a... too expensive, or you're always down like to play.
Yeah, I mean, we can always try it. I mean, to me, the important thing is that it fit the tone of your show. You know, if the joke fits the tone of your show, great. Or we can rewrite it to make the joke fit the tone of your show. But that's the best stuff. It's like when people are thinking about it and they're thinking about the tone and they go, oh, what about this? You're like, yeah, that'll be great. That'll be great. Yeah,
I doubt you would ever like be like, hang on, I got to make a call. I got to call the writer on this one.
No.
Ah, you just no. Field game day decisions.
No, which is so
we'll
fun.
Shoot with the writer. We'll shoot the writer's words. We're always going to do that, right? But we'll just shoot some extra fun stuff.
Of course. That's what was always so fun. I love that you were like, yeah, let's try it. Let's do it. Yeah. Always. No, we're not going to ask permission.
Argentina.
Argentina. I can't even do it. Back at the interrogation room, Jules and Lassie watch through the glass as Sean uncomfortably smiles back at them, almost as if he can see them. This was funny. Amazing.
Great throwback to the one-way glass gags we did.
That we do.
We milked so much out of that one-way glass on the series, which was always some of my favorite bits were the one-way glass bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Henry asked to be placed in a different interrogation room so he can tell the story more efficiently, since Sean keeps joking around. During the treasure hunt, Sean, Gus, and Uncle Jack pose as Spanish professors. Yes, Tim.
Okay, I believe I'm almost positive this is a show first.
Yes.
When Sean refers to me as Lacidophilus.
This is the first thing I wrote down in all caps. Lacidophilus.
Look at us being all so simpatico.
I loved it. And I don't think, what? Oh my God, Jay, do you remember? I didn't write the whole name down, but I think it's in the scene when they introduce Dulé and Sean and who they are. It was, Juan.
Oh yeah.
Hold on. James was Juan Priestley.
Uh-huh.
Right. And Dulé is, and it was like 5 names. And I'm sure, yes, one of the psychos will
totally
give us
I think riffed.
Yeah.
Because
I'm sure
Steven Weber is speaking fake Spanish.
Yes. I mean,
it was hilariously fake Spanish. And then I love when they both go, yes. Together.
Yes. So that I wrote down was maybe a psych first, because over the years, there, yes, mm-hmm. continued, but it turned into Jess, which is a J-Y-E-S. And so, and we still send each other texts, but I think this was the first psych yes that they did together like that.
It was so funny.
And then, it was like, so funny.
We skipped over one joke that I want to talk about, which is like, Sean, I don't know what the cue line is, but he says, that's like asking me if I want my own jetpack or if I wanted to be a koala bear. He wanted to be a koala bear, of course.
Clearly.
Obviously.
Obviously. All right. Okay, so I'm going to keep talking about their Spanish professors. They tour a historic building since there may be a clue there. As they arrive at the first clue's location, they get shot at by three mystery men. This was a big deal. Shootouts were a big deal on our show. I don't know that we'd had any yet.
That would have been an attempted murder.
Mm-hmm. You are correct. You
That's
are
right.
correct.
That's right.
That's right. Back, hold on. Back at the interrogation room, Jules snaps at Sean, telling him to stop messing around. Sean loves it. I love that I got to slam my hand down and act like I'm tough.
This was so, you were so great in this speech.
Was I? I feel like I was like, you need to just stop.
No, you were great. And then he gets turned on by it.
Yeah.
And then your chief says, let me be frank. And he says, well, that makes me Dean and Gus can be Sammy. And Gus is like, why do I have to be Sammy? He goes, well, you want to be Joey Bishop? Is that what you really want?
This bit was so hilarious.
It's next level. It's so funny.
Max, after your O'Hara badass speech.
Yeah.
Ambassador gives you a little damn girl look.
Yes, he does. He's impressed too. Uh-huh. I wasn't messing around.
No.
I didn't always do that, but when I did it, everyone took it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
This is a case where you really took the lead in this interrogation, which I liked a lot.
I do after a little while. Yeah, I liked that too. I felt like the whole I felt like we were balanced. I feel like you usually have the lead on the interrogation stuff, and this one tipped a little more my way. But I also was like, oh, it's Sean, so I can probably manipulate this a little better than you can because he has a crush on me.
I was playing a little more exasperated head in hand, Lassiter.
Yes, you were. You were over it.
You were the hardcore O'Hara, which I like. I always love hardcore O'Hara.
In my British racing green. All right. We find out the mystery men from earlier were actually Uncle Jack's old partners. While Sean, Gus, and Uncle Jack are tied up by Jack's old partners, Sean claims he has to pee. While fidgeting around, he notices Gus has a phone strapped to his leg. It's his work phone. This whole bit, Jay.
So good.
So good. The angle is shot perfectly. It's so good. Does your probiotic contain clinically studied strains? Meet one that does. Ritual's Symbiotic Plus contains two of the world's most studied strains, with over 350 publications of human clinical trials. So what makes the components so clearly Ritual? They're science-backed and research-stacked, especially when stacked up against the leading direct-to-consumer and top-selling probiotics on the market. Ritual is more than a probiotic, you guys. It's a three-in-one with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. I love Ritual because everything is sourced with such integrity and responsibility. All of their different sources are vegan and easily traceable, and that is so important. I love Ritual. I have to take a probiotic every single day just to keep everything in check. Y'all know I'm celiac, all that. And I love this one so much because I can actually trust that it's doing what it says it's going to do. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide, your insides. There's no more shame in your gut game. That's why Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/pineapple to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. There's just some next level moments in this one.
Yeah, I mean, we were in that cabin, and of course Gus has the phone, which he doesn't want to burn any more minutes on.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they're tied up.
They somehow get it off and they call the Chinese restaurant, which is fantastic.
It's so good.
And then they do this gag where they fall. The two guys, Gus and Dulé,
they fall together.
Boom.
Yeah.
And I convinced them to get a stuntman.
They were going to do it on their own?
Yeah. But I'm like, you know, having worked with Burt Reynolds, Burt endured so many injuries when he did his own stunts. And I said to Rodé, I'm like, you don't want to end up there, pal.
That is so sweet of you, because I could see both of them kind of being like, nah, we're fine. Although I feel like Dulé would be more inclined to get a stuntman than James. But all right. Sean dials Henry to tell him they're tied up in a cabin. When they arrive at Henry's house, they realize his home is trashed by Uncle Jack's old partners. They were searching for a special key that Uncle Jack hid. Sean and Gus want to continue the journey, but Henry defiantly quits, but then comes back around and joins in. Thank you, Devin.
Is this the scene where Rodé says, there are a lot of things that don't make sense, like why the oxygen network carries Goodfellas?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right. Just as they all head off on the treasure hunt, yet again, a car follows them. Sean, Gus, and the team run through the forest as the Goonies from earlier chase them. This whole sequence, Jay, was so cool and so fun. I know it probably wasn't the easiest to shoot. And I also noticed that several scenes were in White Rock, which is also like an hour outside Vancouver. Also not easy, not the easiest to shoot. This was a beast. Sean, Gus, and the team run through the forest as the Goonies from earlier. A helicopter arrives with guns pointed at them. Uncle Jack runs off, but at least the rest of them can ride in a helicopter.
There's a moment, I think it's Weber says something, goes, are you for real, man?
Which was overdue, at that point.
Funny. I don't know. Yeah. Dulé Hill is a very funny comic.
He is. And it's funny because, like, before Psych, I don't think anyone knew this side of him, just how comedically talented he was. Back in the interrogation room, Sean realizes there is one last place to check for the treasure. Sean and Gus dig in a cave until Gus hits something with his shovel. They pull out a box with a satchel filled with gold. Sean knows that the guy doesn't work for the Spanish government, even though he claims he did. Oh, right. So back at the interrogation room, that guy shows up. That's right.
Is this where, Maggie, where you have that great joke about the best diet ever?
Best diet ever. Yeah. I got salmonella poisoning when I was in Paris. Also, the idle hands joke, I believe, happens in there.
That's right.
That's such a good joke. Was it like taking the devil out of, it's like, this is pointless or something?
Because if you take the nudity out of idle hands, it makes it unwatchable.
Exactly.
Which is unwatchable right now.
Which, it's funny because today, I don't know if anybody really knows that movie. It was Devin Sawa, right? Like, or something. It was a long time ago, but it was very funny. Very funny joke. So he and Gus run off with the treasure. They also run into Uncle Jack's old partners at the same time. Gus complains because he lost both of his Puma shoes at this point.
Yeah.
Poor thing. He's always getting his foot stuck in something. I feel like in episodes, there's an episode in season one where he, like, his foot gets stuck in a...
He gets just caught in
the... Scary Sherry, poor Gus. Just in time, Uncle Jack arrives. He says they can't come in the car, but to meet him at their special spot later that night.
So, of course, that special spot, this is the third Red Robin shout-out in as many episodes.
We're almost there. Oh, wait. We're almost to Red Robin. Are we at Red Robin?
We're not there yet, but he says... where we used to go to for burgers and shakes, and James goes, Red Robin?
There's also this little joke where James says the many nicknames that he calls Rodé, including Home Skillet.
Yes.
And Gus is like, don't call me Homeskillet.
Yeah. It's very funny watching them over time. I feel like as episodes go on now, because we started the nicknames, that he asks more permission. And he tries many different names on over time. And I think we have a whole bit about this in one of the first movies where I think he has to get approved and he goes through something like 10, 15 names. It's very funny.
That's in Last to Come Home.
Is it Last to Come Home? Oh, so it's part of the series. Yeah. Mm. He has to get approval from him because they're so ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
The police show up. Henry and Sean nod at each other. Apparently, Sean gave Jules a note mentioning the Spanish government official wasn't real and that she smelled nice.
The cops show up. You hopping out of the car with your gun pulled. Again, back to the badass O'Hara.
It was serious. I was... Yeah.
You were not messing around in this one.
I wasn't. I was in it. I was real in it. Yeah. I didn't get to do that often, Jay. It was fun. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, came in and saved the day.
I saved the day. I got the note and I saved the day.
That's right.
Oh, here got the badass cop on.
I know. I love when I got to be badass Juliet. It wasn't that often. So when it happened, I was all in. Mm. Sometimes overly. Sometimes too much. Apparently, John, she knew to follow them and stop the Goonies just in time. Sean and Henry meet up at a Red Robin and talk out their feelings. Sean also reveals he replaced the gold coins with stones for Uncle Jack and that he's giving the real gold to the National History Museum. I love this scene between the two of them because this is the second time we have seen Henry like keep the truth quiet in order to protect Sean. There's like an earlier episode, Jay, with his mother, where Sean has spent his whole life kind of thinking that, you know, Henry kind of messed something up and that's what made her leave. And instead it was this that she left. But Henry just didn't want to tell him that because he held his mother in such a high regard and they ended up working it out. It was fine. Okay, hold on. Henry and Sean split a strawberry milkshake and live another day. Thank you, Devin. I love the ending. Hey, that's the episode.
Where O'Day was pissed off about this Red Robin thing.
Oh, tell us.
He was like, because the line was something like, isn't this Red Robin shake delicious? And he goes, I'm not doing it. I'm not saying it. I'm not doing this commercial. I'm not even. He was just like, I'm not doing it.
Oh, my God.
And the Red Robin people came onto the set and then they're like, we need the money. We got to do it for the money. And he goes, I'm not saying that. Right. I'm like, yeah, I mean, and finally we agreed on that line, which is like, this shake is delicious. He goes, we're in the Red Robin. They're going to know it's a Red Robin shake.
Well, it is true.
Shot of Red Robin.
Yeah.
He goes, they're going to know. I'm not going to say this Red Robin shake. Nobody would ever say that.
That's very funny. I can see Rudé saying that too. Like, it's just not authentic. We would never shout out the name. You would know.
He was mad.
But that's you know what?
He's the character who, when we say to Red Robin in the show, it's always James saying those words.
Yeah, it's actually true. He loves Red Robin. He actually
I know,
loves
but
it.
He just wanted it to be pure. He wanted it to be
I know, because that's Rudé.
Robin shake was a bridge too far for him.
Yeah.
Right.
No. So
there were many meetings about that. Many
are you serious?
I'm really serious. This is a big deal. It was a big deal.
The Red Robin milkshake. I'm realizing this too, Tim. Did our sloppy Joe bits get cut out over the years? Because I feel like in the first couple of seasons we had a lot of sloppy Joe moments, and
I don't think it ever made. I don't think it ever made it in.
We didn't. No one wanted to take our food seriously.
We're just going. Hey, want to go get sloppy Joe's?
Yeah.
And they didn't find it was a satisfying enough button for the scene.
Yeah, I know. We thought it would be a cute character thing.
As Maggie and I were texting back and forth about who could get to guest on this episode, we're like, do you think we can get Jay? And I was kind of like, I don't know if we're ever going to get Jay. And
I'm
glad we got you. Because if we were making Psych now, you being so freaking busy and talented, there's no way we'd get you to come direct our show.
That's not true. I would definitely come. I would definitely come.
Thank you, Jay. We're going to take you up on that.
And if you decide or you ever get to those other episodes I did, I'll come back.
I'm gonna mark this. And by the way, the psychos are going to remember this, Jay.
Okay.
So you're on the hook now, okay?
Great. I like being on the hook.
Okay, good. We love having you. Well, we do have some fan questions. Oh, and I did just want to shout out again when you came up and did Angel from Hell and how fun that was and how meaningful that was.
With Jane Lynch.
Yeah, Jane, who I'm hoping will do. She was in the next episode, right, Tim? Or two episodes from now. Yeah. Of Psych.
She and I met on Arrested Development and we argued over a joke. And I kept suggesting to her that, you know, if you put the pause after that word, I think you'll unlock the funny of this line. Uh-huh. And she was like, "Who are you again?" Oh. And we were, like, and Jane. She kept not putting the pause there. And then we went like, yeah, I'm like, and I was like, "Hey, you know, if you just put a pause right there," she goes, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'll try it. And then she wouldn't do it. And we were now going into like take 8. And oh. So I guess you're just not going to put the pause there. And she goes, no, I'll do it. And I'm like, action. And she does it. And she calls me over. She goes, "Hey, you're right." And then we became friends.
You have such a, you're just a comedic, you get it. And I remember even doing Angel from Hell. I was the straight person. You know, I sort of had, she was the wild one and right. I had the straight role, which sometimes is hard because you got to keep the scene alive and you're reacting. And I remember I had to give a speech at one point. I don't remember exactly what it was. I remember it was the episode you were directing and we were there for a long time. It was like a very long thing. And I remember struggling with a line that you just came over and just like that. I think you were like, you know, maybe if you do it this way, and it totally fixed it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I remember it. It was a party at the house. That's all I remember. Yeah. I remember that about the scene, but, and then that.
I remember that too.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. I hope I got it. Did I ever get it?
Yeah, of course you got it.
I feel like
I don't
we got
move
there.
On until it's gotten.
That's what I thought, because I also remember that about you. You kind of don't. You don't care that a clock is ticking. You don't care that these other things are kind of happening. We're going to make the day.
Yeah.
We're always going to get there. And so you don't, there's no panic. There's no rush. It's like, you know, take your time and get it right. And I love that about you.
I love
that about working with you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for helping my beloved co-host and I podcast the shit out of this one. Easter Sunday tomorrow.
Yes. Wait, we have some fan questions, but we'll fly through them really quick. Okay, out of the cast, who would most likely go on a treasure hunt? Oh, God, that would be me and you, Tim. No question.
Say that. 100%.
I would be like, "There's a treasure? Let's go." Okay. why do you think Sean waited at Red Robin? Was he hopeful or naive?
He was both.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, like he believed his uncle would show up.
There's a real innocence to it.
And he was hopeful.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's actually really sweet.
And I wanted him to show up. I wanted Weber to show up, but obviously the father and the son had to sort of make up at the end, and that was a more important thing. But I felt it hurt my heart that the uncle didn't show up.
Yeah.
In our heart, the Funkle showed.
Yeah.
The Funkle. That's right. was there actually a helicopter, which we sort of talked about, but yes there was.
Yes, definitely. There was definitely a helicopter.
It was definitely a Jay wasn't going to come up and direct the episode unless there was a helicopter.
We needed a damn helicopter.
Yeah.
It was in the script.
Exactly. How do you write that in a script and fake it? I don't even know, unless it was just going to look really bad with like wind and stuff and not actually see the helicopter. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
What do you think Uncle Jack has been up to all these years? Oh dear. Is he out? Is he in prison? Not in prison? Is he?
I like to think he's still searching. I mean, there are all those great documentaries about the sunken ships between Miami and the Bahamas. There are like hundreds of sunken ships down there, and there's treasure down there, right? I mean, if you follow it, like they do bring up, you know, hundreds of millions of gold galleons every now and then. And I like to think he's out there somewhere in a boat in the Bahamas, sleeping with somebody's wife.
We got to shout out
Uncle Jack
and our resident treasure hunter.
Oh, Chris, we do, actually. Chris and Beverly Turner, theringfinders.com.
And Chris wears a Roman coin around his neck that he I think he unearthed in the UK one year.
Yeah. We've talked about them a lot. They were the stand-ins for James and I on the show. And they also have a side business of finding treasure, but finding you can hire them to say you lose your ring, which a lot of people do, swimming or on a beach somewhere, or they will find your jewelry. They will find anything for you. They will go on a mission.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ringfinders.com. They're the real deal.
I love it.
Gus missing that step. Happy, hilarious accident or on purpose?
On purpose.
It was on purpose. That was in the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just were building a little bit of slapstick into all the running around shots. He lost his shoe. He missed the step. Corbin got hit by the door. All designed.
All designed. It was all good.
Yeah.
I feel like that step was in the opening credits one season, too. I mean, that step, the misstep shot.
There were a couple of opening credit shots, like when they're walking up the steps and Dulé completely drops out of frame when he falls in the beginning. That's part of the opening credits, I feel like, going forward from now
on. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Love it.
It was all you, Jay.
Yeah. Well, partly me.
Okay. Where would you all hide treasure and what would the treasure be?
Hang on, let me get a pen.
I feel like I'd almost like hide it in plain sight, maybe. But also then you can't really have a map to go find it. And then that just takes away all the fun. But then my gut said, like, I don't know, in like wine bottles.
You'd want to bury it in your backyard, right? I mean,
you'd
have to bury it in your backyard just so you could control the ground.
And you'd want to keep it close.
Yeah, then put like a little, you know, like a swing set over it or something, you know, something that's a pain in the ass to move.
Exactly where I buried my treasure when I was 7 years old.
That's right.
I buried some swing set in my backyard.
That's right.
Damn it, we sold that house.
What would the treasure be, guys? Isn't treasure like treasure? When I think of treasure, I think of how it was presented in this episode, kind
of. Yeah, it's gold. It's got to be gold.
It's got to be gold.
We're not going to bury Bitcoin, are you?
No.
Be
Bitcoin. Bury the Bitcoin. You can't. It's invisible.
I know. I don't know what it's invisible is. I just coin. Hear about it.
Okay, let's recap.
I would go Jay with Kruger, just because it's got a K, so it's funny.
What is it?
Krugerrands.
Krugerrands.
Yeah.
What's Krugerrands?
Like a Dutch money or something.
Oh, Kruger. Okay, got it. I was thinking it was like another Dogecoin or a Bitcoin or an invisible thing that those things are. To recap, Jay Chandrasekhar is here, and he has a movie coming out tomorrow when you all listen to this. We're saying Friday because it's Sunday for us, called Easter Sunday, that everyone should see. Anything else, Jay, that you want to share?
I think that's it.
I think we did good.
Yeah.
And we're going to have you back since you promised.
Great. Thank you.
It was so good to see your face on the Zoom. It's so good to talk to you and connect anyway. I feel like, you know, we'll see you very soon, but good luck. And I can't wait to see the movie.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All righty.
Bye now.
All right, bye. What an amazing episode. It was so, so fun. It really did feel like an adventure. I think it was one of the biggest episodes we had done thus far with all those stunts and everything else. And Jay directed the shit out of it. And we were so lucky to have him. And we were so lucky to have him today. Thank you all again for listening to episode 4 of The Psychologists Are In. Follow us at our Instagram at The Psychologists Are In and our Twitter at Psychologist Pod.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.